Is the Earth itself alive? That's the remarkable idea behind the Gaia theory, that our planet operates like a living organism. James Lovelock first came up with a Gaia hypothesis in the 1960s, when he was working at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory trying to figure out if there was life on Mars. By now, scientists have confirmed the basic outlines of the Gaia theory, but it wasn't always so. In fact, Lovelock was once considered a scientific crank, and he couldn't get any scientific journal to publish his research on Gaia. Today, James Lovelock is in his early 90s, and he's one of the world's most celebrated scientists. Steve Paulson recently sat down with Lovelock to talk about the roots of his radical idea.
There you were, working at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California in the 1960s, trying to figure out whether Mars might have life, and some of these first ideas came about what the essence of life was. Was there an aha moment when you suddenly hit on the core of your Gaia idea?
Yes, indeed there was. I remember it vividly. It was in September 1965 when I was in a room with Carl Sagan, now sadly dead, and a philosopher, Lady Diane Hitchcock, who was working with me on these experiments. And into the room marched an astronomer, Lou Kaplan, carrying an armful of papers, and he said, "Look at this, look at this. These are the results of the atmospheric analyses of Mars and Venus done by a French observatory at Pic de Midi, showing what is the composition of Mars and Venus's atmospheres." And we said, "Well, what is it?" And he said, "Practically nothing but carbon dioxide." And I immediately knew this meant that Mars was high entropy and therefore probably lifeless. And it made me think about the Earth's incredible mixed atmosphere and made me realize suddenly, almost as in a moment, that the presence of oxygen and methane in the Earth's atmosphere means that something is producing it at the surface and it would have to be regulated, otherwise it wouldn't stay constant.
And that's really the core of your Gaia theory, isn't it? That there's some self-regulating system within Earth itself. There's this complex interaction between living and non-living systems.
Exactly. And if you think about it, anything that can regulate the atmospheric gases must be able to regulate the climate.
Is that really the radical piece of the Gaia theory? It's this combination of the living and the non-living mechanisms, and together they form this larger entity, what you call a living organism. You call the Earth as a living organism in itself.
Yeah, if you expand the definition of life a bit, you can look on planets like the Earth as alive. They regulate their temperatures, they metabolize, they do all sorts of things that living things do. The only thing they don't do is reproduce. But then something that lives a quarter the age of the universe hardly needs to reproduce.
I want to take you back to those early years when you were just developing this theory and some other people started to come up with similar ideas in the 1970s. The biologist Lewis Thomas wrote his famous book, The Lives of a Cell, and he wrote about how the outer membrane of the cell is crucial to the cell's organization. Essentially, it creates the space for pockets of order within a larger sea of disorder. And then he drew an analogy between the membrane of the cell and the Earth as a whole. And I guess after he saw those photos that came back from the first Apollo missions, and he wrote about how the Earth constructed its own membrane by modifying the atmosphere around it. Was that basically the same idea that you had?
Yes, it was indeed, and there's no question that I think we were both thinking of the same kind of thing.
Now, there have been people, of course, who've taken your idea of Gaia into more religious directions, most famously all those New Agers who talk about Mother Earth as kind of a spiritual entity in itself. What do you make of their enthusiasm for Gaia?
Well, as a scientist, I must admit they were an awful nuisance to me, but I have enormous sympathies. I think in every one of us there is a need for something spiritual, if you want to call it that, a need to think outside the straitjacket of science, and I respect that. It was awkward for me trying to introduce a theory that that the biologists thought I was talking about a religion.
Were you ever tempted to abandon the word Gaia?
Oh, often, yes. And of course, other scientists who followed the similar lines use the term Earth system science. But I don't think you can move anybody with a term like that. The word Gaia, after all, it's a four-letter word, and it was suggested by a really wonderful novelist, William Golding, a Nobel Prize-winning novelist. Who the heck would turn down an offer like that?
Wasn't he an old drinking buddy of yours back in England?
Yes, he was indeed. After that eureka moment at JPL, I was back in Britain and I was talking with him. We often talked, and I told him about it. And he said, well, if you're going to come up with big ideas like that, you better give it a proper name. So I suggest you call it Gaia.
Now, you mentioned that when your Gaia theory first came out, it got a lot of flack from scientists, especially from biologists. Why do you think your theory of Gaia drew so much criticism from the scientific establishment?
Because they felt a real threat. After all, you see, you had the biologists talking about the evolution of life, of Darwinism, in one set of buildings across the quadrangle, and on the other side there were the geologists talking about the evolution of the material Earth, and they were both happy. This was a kind of modus vivendi that enabled them to teach generation after generation of students in completely the wrong thing. For them to have to throw away all their textbooks and go back and start again, well, that's one heck of a threat to a biologist or a geologist. So they didn't like it one bit.
And how would you assess the state of scientific thinking about Gaia now?
Well, they've accepted Gaia almost completely. There was a great meeting at Amsterdam in 2001 where over 1,000 scientists signed a declaration, the Amsterdam Declaration, saying that the Earth is a self-regulating system made up of all life, including humans, the ocean, the air, and the surface rocks, and it self-regulates climate and chemistry. Oh, that, I mean, that's as close to Gaia as you can get. And so it's mainstream science. But having said that, they don't then apply it in their work. You see, the geophysicists of the IPCC know this, but they don't know how to put it in their models.
You spent decades in the wilderness, you could say. I mean, sort of in terms of what mainstream science was saying, I mean, you were denounced after your first book about Gaia came out, I mean, by a lot of scientists. Do you feel vindicated now?
Yes, I do in a way, but it wasn't that bad. You see, I chose to do science independently. I could never have worked on a subject like Gaia at a university or a government or a commercial lab. I would have been told to stop it immediately. It was both bringing disrepute on the institute or university, and it wasn't bringing any profits or anything useful in. So you have to be independent to do a subject like that. That used to be the norm in science. It's only become organized and, you know, sort of run by grants and things in recent years.
So when you say you were doing this independently, what, you were just working out of your house? Did you just...
Exactly.
You just created a laboratory in your house to work out these models?
That's right. It was very easy for a scientist to get a ride on a ship, for example, and take some measurements, which I did on one of the British Antarctic ships, the Shackleton, that went from Britain down to Antarctica and back. And that made some very useful measurements that supported the theory. And I could also get a ride on military aircraft and things like that. It's very easy if you're an independent on your own to do those kind of things. Very difficult if you're working in a university or a government lab.
Did you have trouble getting your results published in scientific journals?
Not that sort of result, like the measurements in the stratosphere or on the ocean. No, that's fairly straightforward. But any paper on Gaia was damned. You'd only to put it in the title, and the peer reviewers would throw it out immediately as New Age rubbish.
So how did you get around that?
By writing books. That was the only way I could get my scientific data in the public environment. But it was rather sad, because the scientists would not quote the books, because they said they wouldn't quote them because they weren't peer reviewed.
So are there larger lessons, then, about how science is done and how to take on big ideas when they are considered unacceptable by the scientific establishment?
I suppose so, although individual experiences are almost by nature unique, and what suited me may not suit many other people. But for those that feel inclined to do it, I would say give it a whirl, as long as you don't burn your boats and you can go back.
That's James Lovelock talking with Steve Paulson about his Gaia theory.